Hello, and thank you for joining us. I am your host, Soulful Business and Leadership Coach Jeffrey Biesecker. We are all on the journey to discover the light inside, that beacon which guides us to live our truest, most authentic self. This is episode 0067. Man is a social being, and interdependence is and ought to be as much our ideal as self-sufficiency. In fact, the fundamental law of humanity is interdependence. A person is a person through our connectedness to others. And a sense of competition breeds separation. Rather than guiding us towards forming collaborative bonds, our interaction with others aligns us and allows us to do great things. Our guest, Maxwell Ivey, shares insight from a blind man's inspirational guide to success as we explore the all-too-important reason why our interactions with others allows us to form greater bonds and build deeper connections, leading us towards our limitless potential to collaborate and co-create. We're so often taught to view dependency as a negative thing. Join Max and I as we dispel this inaccurate mistruth on The Light Inside. Have you heard of AMPI? Through the medium of live video, AMPI plans to change the world. As an online platform for live recreational learning, AMPI is the largest marketplace for live classes. Their mission is connecting and enriching humanity through knowledge. With over 60 categories of live classes with experts around the world, their program is the future of personal growth, guaranteeing you stay on track for lifelong personal learning and growth. Whether you are sharpening your Japanese, learning to draw, or improving your chess skills, AMPI is the place you go to enrich your life, leading the way to a brighter us. If you place value and importance on lifelong personal learning, visit www.ampi.com to find your class, book your seat, and go live today. My guest today is one of the kindest, most genuine human beings I've ever met. Known as the blind blogger, Maxwell Ivey is a man of great insight and wisdom into the very nature of human existence. Max and I talk about the major role interdependency plays in building effective relationships with others. This was such an energetic and joyful conversation that left me lit up with the amazing amount of light Max shines. Hi, Maxwell. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning. I'm doing good. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well. So I am excited to share a conversation with you today.
Looking forward to it. Also, it's weird. You sound like somebody I go to church with. The voice is eerily similar. The sad thing is my brain recognizes the voice, but can't put the name with it this morning. So
yeah, I have that problem often myself. You know, I have a recollection of somebody, and putting the two and two together, the more I age, especially, becomes a greater task for me.
Yeah, Ken Jennings often says in interviews that the thing about being a Jeopardy champion isn't whether you're smart or not, it's whether you can access the information you've accumulated in less than 5 seconds.
That's a great point. That'd be a great conversation to have sometime, looking at that angle of how we access our memory and bringing those things back into recall.
Yeah, and you know, I think another thing would be fascinating about that conversation is, since it's natural, since we all do it, and we all will eventually go through it because age, as my favorite sports commentator, Charlie Palillo, likes to say, Father Time is undefeated, you know? Someday, while it's going to take longer than other people, someday Tom Brady will not be quarterbacking in the NFL, you know?
Yeah.
Someday, at some point, Madonna will not be able to go out on tour again. It's just inevitable. So I think, you can look it up. He's famous for that quote. He's former Houston radio guy, is now on TV on the national level. But since it's so natural, why do we always have to apologize for it? Yeah. Why do we feel like we have to give excuses for not being able to remember somebody? You know, I mean, it's whatever. I think it's one of those conversations we should have more, because we beat ourselves up over stuff that we have no control over.
Oh, for sure. That whole act of feeling the necessity to apologize for things that we aren't necessarily creating a slight out of, you know, that's something I've spent a lot of time over the last several years studying myself, where we step into that role where we feel we have to offer an apology before there's even a perceived slight from someone.
Right. Here's a perfect example, okay? I get an email in my inbox that somebody sent yesterday.
Yes.
I apologize. I tell them I'm sorry I didn't get it sooner.
Yeah.
You know, I had no way of knowing the email was in my inbox.
Yeah, you know, that to me steps along those lines where we have to consider, A, the potential of change happening, things out of our sight, out of our scope happening.
Yeah.
You know, on a daily occurrence, there are things that happen or beyond our control. Where do we step into that role of being open to surrender to others, first and foremost, open to surrender to the potential in the universe, and then accepting of grace, both given and taken, toward each other?
Right. And I think that's one of those places where my blindness gives me an advantage, because I have long ago accepted that there is very little in my universe that fits within my control. And there's a peace that comes with accepting that. Now, there's also there can also be a terror that comes with it, depending on what kind of person you are and how you think about things. But if you get to the point where you realize you don't have control over much, it can bring you a lot of peace.
Oh, yeah.
I've actually had conversations with people from this point of view. They're like, I don't think I would get in a driverless car. I can't trust the computers. And my response is, I get in cars all the time with people I don't know if I can trust or not. So to me, it's, do I trust a human being or do I trust the computer? You know, it's, I have no control over either one. The human driver could be worse than the computer driver, or vice versa. So, you know, I've had to come to accept that if I want to get to where I want to go within a reasonable nearness to the time I want to get there, I have to accept. I have to give up control and let other people worry about it. And of course, that also comes through prayer. And, you know, one of the greatest scriptures in the Bible is, throw your anxiety on me. And I've had conversations about that particular scripture with people. And there's two things about it most people don't talk about. One is, it says throw. It doesn't say hand, pass, or ask if somebody else will hold this for you for a minute. It says throw, like you're throwing a hot piece of metal, you know. And the other thing is I don't know if you're a baseball player, but when it comes to getting somebody out at home plate, is it easier to throw the ball from left field, shortstop, or the pitcher? You know, the closer relationship you have with your God, your higher power, the universe, whatever you want to call it, the easier it is to get rid of that anxiety. So
yeah.
I feel like my blindness, my faith, and my upbringing have given me the ability to see control with grace, as you mentioned a little bit ago.
That brings me to a point where I'd like to jump in a conversation today based on that notion of interdependence.
I get a laugh out of how that is becoming such a big thing that I talk about, because
I've seen that surface so often in your conversations, and I feel that has such a relevant connection, not only to this conversation we've started today, but how we interact throughout life.
Right. Are we recording now or not?
Live. We're rolling.
Okay.
Roll right in.
Okay. I have a tendency to lose good stuff before the host presses record. So I want to check, you know.
I always roll in from point A to point B, because that is where, you know, a lot of that magic happens. Sometimes that's startling to people because they think, okay, I need the preparation step. They start to set that mindset, that mind state, that I've got to hit the go light. But in the process, you're starting to already form how you're going to guide that conversation rather than just being present with the conversation. So often, like you mentioned, those nuggets are missing because you forgot to do that or you weren't ready to do that. This way, the conversation is authentic from point A to point B, you know?
All right. Well, yeah. I like that. Yeah. That's the way we...
Great.
Right. And I'm going to sidetrack you here for a minute because I want to talk about something important off of what we were just talking before we get to the interdependence. And that is, I coach people on being podcast guests. And one of the things I tell them is, look, this is your story. This is your business. This is your coaching practice. This is your film, album, book. This is yours. You've invested your life in it. You shouldn't have to prepare. You shouldn't have to think about it. You should just be able to sit down and press record with somebody, have a conversation, Because really, is there a question you can ask me that I don't know the answer to? There isn't.
Probably not.
Exactly. And the other important thing is, and this is something I like to share with people, is when me and you have a conversation, okay, I could get all upset. And in fact, my first couple of years doing interviews, I've said a couple of times over the size of the audience. But what you have to remember is it's the same thing here as it is in public speaking. Really, all you're doing is having a conversation or you're making a statement to one person. There just may happen to be a whole bunch of other people listening. And this is where one of my favorite quotes comes in, because I love Yoda from the second Star Wars movie, where he says, there is no big or small, there only is. And, you know, that gets into how we often trick ourselves into thinking something is more difficult than it is. Because, I mean, there's no difference between giving a talk in front of 12 people and giving a talk in front of 20,000 people, because you're doing the same thing.
Yes. That's the thing. And then it's your point of reference regardless.
Yeah. Even difference. You know, even we can trick ourselves into thinking we're doing something in a new way. And we find out that we're not. You know, back in our carnival days, we used to do what they called advanced sale. We would sell them tickets months before the event. The tickets would be cheaper and the organizers would get more money out of them. But we would know when we got there, we had a certain amount of income expected. And I used to think, there's no parallels between the carnival business and being an author. And then I realized, Max, why couldn't you do an advanced sale and have people buy X number of copies of your books? And then, you know, when you go to somewhere to speak, you've already got your expenses covered at least, or maybe even made a little money. So thinking things are different can be really a brain trigger that gets us off track and makes us nervous.
Yes. And so many ways. We do that in so many ways throughout our being, our livelihoods. And, you know, falls back to that Plato notion of stratification. Bigger, more, better. We build those perceptions, but really, is there much difference from one point to the next? And one of the things I've really pondered through the course of this podcasting journey is this relationship we have often with the notion of average and how we create so many different beliefs out of that. I'm not going to throw a lot of fuel on the fire and try to dissect that completely today, but I will insert the thought that everything we do can and does become an average of everything we have done and everything we will do. Eventually, we all are constantly working from an average of something, which in and of itself makes us nothing more than the averages we experience.
You know, I'm not sure I can buy into that one. That's one of those deep in the weeds. Yeah. I'm going to have to think about it a while. But the reason I'm going to have to think about it is because of my own personal journey. Because it seems like, you know, I've gone from a guy who was a carnival owner. I got out of the carnival business because my dad's death eventually caused our show to close. I started a website helping people sell used rides. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. So I had to learn something new pretty much every day some of the time. Yes. I've gone from that to being an author, a speaker, a singer, a traveler, and host of What's Your Excuse? And it seems like every time I turn around, I'm doing something that's different, that's more challenging, that's more difficult. And so I don't know if I buy into average, unless we assume that Max's average is different than everybody else's average. And I would never believe that, because I honestly, I know for a fact I'm nobody special. I just get up every day and do the next thing. I show up. And if that makes me different, it does. But so to me, I have a hard time believing that we are all the sum of our average or the sum of other people's average, because I didn't plan on being here when I started. And I don't know where I'm going to be next.
That's a whole other conversation. Yeah. Maybe we won't dive down that today. But you know, I'd like to throw that out there, that it all does evolve around that interdependence of your experience, that interdependence of your interaction with others. How we relate ultimately forms how we view our belief in things.
Right, right. And I'm glad you dragged me back to interdependence, because it's a very important subject.
Yeah.
Hey, I am the king of distractions.
And we come in pretty vague on this conversation today with where we would go with it. I tend to do that a little bit, because in the moment, you know, there again, we're reacting and interacting in how we're meeting. And this is largely our first conversation of diving in and kind of dissecting and sharing views. So.
Right, so am I Simon or Garfunkel? I'm trying to figure that out.
Let's see here. How are we going to pick that one? I don't know.
Okay. All right. So let's get back to interdependence. Okay. First thing, I have to admit that this is nothing new, yes. And most people don't talk about it. And the funny thing is, the first time I ever heard this mentioned was in a book by Tom Sullivan, who's a famous singer, songwriter, entertainer, documentary filmmaker who happens to be blind. He's famous. And he wrote a book called Seeing Lessons, Things I Learned in the Dark, or Hearing Lessons, Things I Learned in the Dark. And it was the first time I really heard somebody dive deep into this whole idea of interdependence. And then a few years ago, when I was on the spot needing to give a 5-minute talk on one topic, I thought, you know, I'm going to speak on asking for help and accepting help. And I gave a really good talk. And at the end, I met Alex Sanfilippo, who's the guy behind Creating a Brand and PodMatch. Yeah. He's a real good friend
good
of mine.
Good friend of mine also. Great
wonderful,
guy.
Wonderful human being as well. Lucky, one of the luckiest men in the world because his wife is amazing too.
Yes.
He's probably more accomplished than he is, but most people will never hear about it because she doesn't do interviews.
I'm sure that's what he'll say also.
Oh, it's the truth. It's the truth. So after I did the speech, I did the little talk, let's call it, Alex said, you know, Max, I love what you said. You just gave a talk on interdependence versus independence. And I'm like, okay, that's the word. And I don't understand why this has resonated with people as much as it has, but it seems like, so many people contact me about this particular topic, business people especially, because they have a harder time than creative people. But the thing is we aren't meant to do important things by ourselves. We aren't built that way. We are social people, and we are intended to do things in a group, or at least by having the help, assistance, and encouragement of other people. The more important thing is, it isn't much fun if you do it by yourself. Yeah, you have the bragging rights of saying you did it, and you may be one of the 3% in the world who can do it by themselves, but trust me, it ain't as much fun. So the whole point of getting there is to get there with joy. Just like the main reason I do podcast interviews is because this is much more fun than social media, email list building, or any of that other junk we do. So we aren't meant to do stuff by ourselves. It's more fun. The journey is easier. And when the journey goes wrong, we have people along to encourage us or to call us out when we're making excuses. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, when you do something for another person who could do nothing for you but say thank you, how does that make you feel? When you carry somebody's groceries or their garbage or watch a kid for 30 seconds so somebody can close the car door, whatever it is, you know, if when you do stuff for other people, it makes you feel good, right?
That's an act of stewardship and acting from a servant's heart.
Right,
you know,
right.
That should empower you with that joy.
Right. So if it makes you feel good, how good do you think it would make somebody else feel if you came along and you said, hey, I know that you're the expert on this. I know you spent years of your life honing a skill, developing a talent, learning all this information. I am struggling with this. I need to get to this point in my life. I know you know it all. Would you please help me? So you ask sincerely. So how good do you think that makes the other person feel?
You know, that sense of value, that right there, it signals that you have meaning and purpose to me. You have meaning and purpose to yourself.
Right, right. And how often do you think most people, especially most accomplished people, how often do you think they get that opportunity where somebody comes along and appreciates the effort they've put in and says, hey, I would like your help? You know, how often does that happen for people? Because we tend to put people on pedestals.
Often not enough. I don't need. Do you have any statistical basis on that?
No, I do not. But we tend to put people on pedestals. And, you know, we tend to think people are more special than they are, that they're unapproachable, that there's no way they would want to help me. And so I'm sure that there are a lot of people that go through their lives and they're doing what they have to do. But just imagine how much better their day would be. So think about it this way. You're actually making other people's lives harder and less joyful by not asking for their help or not asking for the opportunity.
That's a great perspective to look at.
Yeah. And I wrap it all up with this one expression, which I'm going to say twice because I want to make sure people get it. When you refuse to ask, you rob the other person of the joy they would have received from helping you. So listen to this really closely, y'all. This is about putting the focus on the other person, taking it off of your ego. When you refuse to ask, you rob the other person of the joy they would have received from helping you. Mm. That's really at the heart of what I do and what I'm hoping more people will do, because really the one thing that keeps us from asking is fear. We're afraid of looking stupid, inept. We're afraid of looking lazy. We also have this built-in belief that everybody else is doing it by themselves. So if I can't do it by myself, I'm a failure. So, you know, we have that feeling if we're going to reach out and ask for help, even reaching out and asking for opportunities even.
Yeah.
You know, that has a whole nother fear in it. Like, you know, well, there's no way they would want to have me on their podcast, or there's no way they'd want me to write for their blog or their book, or there's no way they'd even want to talk to me because they're famous and I'm not, you know, so there's that fear. So there's a lot of fear involved in asking, but just think about it. You're making the other guy's life harder. The other girl's life is harder because you have refused to ask. You've refused to give them the opportunity to help with your journey, to be a part of your story, and to be able to claim credit for your story even.
We so often embolden and engender that notion of independence, and that being one of the more commonly higher held states of all notions of success, all notions of our worth, rather than embracing that co-creative state of interdependence.
Right. And I feel like you're translating my words into simpler, more well-known phrases. So thanks for being my interpreter today. I'm going to have to listen to this podcast later and figure out what the heck I've been saying.
I'm just referencing that and filtering that back through from, okay, this is how I'm relating to that. And I think by and large, that's what we do, is we share these experiences together and try to find that common bond, that common meaning. How do we turn that into the fuel to co-create, to really move us forward into another state of being?
Right, right. And I want to take this opportunity to encourage other podcasters. I do a lot of interviews.
Yes.
I coach people on interviews. You are the first host I can think of in a long, 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 long time who has actually made it a conversation, who's actually had their own thoughts, my thoughts. And you should be, not only should you be congratulated for that.
Well, thank you.
Other people that are thinking about starting a show, you should take this guy's example. You should.
Yeah. I think that speaks back to that state we mentioned, where so often we feel we have to come into this transaction, because that's what it is. You know, it's an equal exchange, but we feel like we have to come into this transaction able to validate who and what we are first and foremost, and then also validating the worth and what information we're about to convey.
I don't think about that stuff. I'm a real mindful approach. My blindness has taught me that I don't have the space in my brain for a whole bunch of other stuff. So
yeah,
I focus strictly on the moment. Although I am the king of distraction, I distract myself and hosts and Uber drivers all the time. But there's one more key important point of this interdependence. And it's what I like to call the PhD level of asking.
Yes.
And what this is what do you do when somebody comes along and offers to help? Because you see, we don't just ask with our words. We often ask through prayer, meditation, the law of attraction. There are people in this world who are intuitive. They listen really well and they notice things that we need. It could be a social media post. It could be a blog post. It could be an email. And you go back and read that email and you're like, I didn't ask this person to help. It could be, there's so many ways we let people in the world know what we need. And some of those people, they care about you even though they don't know you. Some of them are intuitive and it just hurts them on a soul level not to try to help you. So here's the thing. When somebody does offer to help you, what do? And you know what most people do? Most people, they get all up in their ego and they go, who the heck do they think they are? I don't need their help. I'm doing just fine by myself. Now, why don't you go help somebody who needs it? You know, that's the immediate reaction, because for most people, it really is. Yes. It really does bother you to have somebody think you need help. So, you know, here's the point where you have to remember, like I said, one, we're asking all the time. We just don't always know we're doing it.
Yes.
But two, it took that person more courage to offer to help you than it takes you to ask somebody. Mm. It took them more courage. They had to reach out to somebody that they only know through social media or email, or maybe 1 5-minute conversation in person. They have to reach out to you with courage. So remember that. If you don't think you need their help, at least be nice about it. But if you're smart, you'll take their help, you'll apply their advice and suggestions, and you will be thankful.
There are a lot of reasons and a lot of potential explanations why we can have that knee-jerk reaction. You know, we talk about it frequently on our program, some of these past experiences, past sometimes traumatic experiences, sometimes just simply the past pattern that we've been taught and how we relate and how we interact.
Yeah, that is true. We do often have to fight our past experiences, but even some of our past positive experiences can come in and get us, you know, because our brain is, you know, it's kind of messed up some of the time. You never know what lesson a person is going to learn from an experience. I've actually had conversations with people who are afraid of being too successful.
It's a very real thing a lot of times. So, it's a very real thing, that kind of self-doubt.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not afraid of it, but I understand it.
You know, that self-doubt can come in, and for a lot of reasons, again, that we could go down about 20 different paths that I can instantly think of. I don't know that we're going to deviate down that today, pulling back to that interdependence notion. You know, looking in, that's all what is commonly in a more scientific realm dealt in the social exchange theory field of study, which suggests our behavior is largely rooted in that transactional nature and based on that exchange of cost and benefit analysis. What's in it for me so often becomes the point of reference we relate from in that relationship.
Yeah, I wish they wouldn't talk about it as exchange theory, because me, that's automatically puts you in the wrong frame of mind. Because to me, none of this stuff works if you do it thinking, what am I going to get out of it? It only works if you do it thinking, I'm going to do this for some other person with joy and love, regardless of the outcome. That's the only way it works. But now scientists are. And sadly, the exchange theory has become like the dominant strain of a virus in the corporate world, in the political world, and even in some of the scientific world. It's all about what can you do for me? And you know, a lot of times my journey has benefited from people who they had no idea what they were going to get back out of it. And same on my side. I published my first book on a dare. A woman challenged me to write it for a virtual summit. When it came time to publish it, I didn't have the first clue. But a year before that, my editor, Lorraine Regulay, had noticed I was having some trouble with the images on my Midway Marketplace site. They were showing up in the middle of blog posts and it making it difficult for people to read them. And you know, if we make things difficult on the internet, people go to somebody else's website. So she's like, Max doesn't know he's doing this. It would really help him. I'm just going to say hi and tell him I've noticed this. Would he like me to help him fix it? Which she did that. And I said, sure. And we figured out it was just one little select box in my blog settings, and it was fixed from then on. And that started a friendship. And then a year later, when I needed to publish a book, you know, here we were. But even then, she didn't charge me what she charged everybody else. She gave me an installment plan that she didn't do for everybody else. So that all started because, you know, she was like, I'm going to help this person. If she had thought, well, I'm only going to do this if I believe he's going to hire me, she would have never done it. Because if she'd looked at my post at that time, she would have known I probably couldn't have afforded her rates, even though they're very reasonable, you know. But she did it just because she felt like she should do it. And that's really the hard part about this deal. You know, I spend a lot of time reaching out to podcasts and radio hosts to try to get myself and clients booked on their shows. But if I run across somebody that I'm not a fit for, and I don't have a client that's a fit for, if I know somebody in my circle of friends, or if I've seen somebody online I like, I'll still make an introduction.
Yes, yes, agreed.
I'm doing that to help the other hosts, because I know how hard it is to be a podcast host. You know, so you have to be thinking about it. Am I doing this to get something out of it, or am I just doing it because it's what I should be doing as a loving human being that's trying to make things better in this world? And the great thing about it is, if you do that enough, you know, because in the beginning you have to think about these
things. Yes.
You have to consciously work through these questions in your mind. But the more you do things for others without thinking about the result, the more it becomes part of your personality.
Yeah.
Just like I honestly believe that my vision loss made me more willing to ask for help and accept for help and make that part of my personality. And thankful, it's turned out to be something that I can share with the rest of the world that they really need to hear. You know, speaking of doing things from a point of love, I never really thought I was going to inspire anybody. It took 2 years of arguing with my closest friends, my inner circle in the dark room in the back of the garage, online that is.
Yes.
And when I finally accepted it, I realized that once I accepted that role, it made me have a feeling of obligation. Like, I feel like from now on, I have this responsibility that whatever I have that can help other people, that can encourage, inspire, or motivate them, or even just entertain them, I feel like I have an obligation to put that out into the world. And that's something that's happened over time as I've seen the effect that I have on people.
Having experienced that, and from that perspective, how do you feel we can personally begin to shift that notion of interacting from that transactional standpoint into being more collaborative and of service, you know, of equal benefit and value to others? How do we start to form that consciously?
Well, I think it's just like anything else we do. We have to be conscious about it. We have to create a set of steps in our mind that we will actually work through. Because in the beginning, yes, you have to think about it. For example, I didn't roll out of bed being a positive, optimistic person who finds the good in just about everything. That's something that's happened over time. But here's how it happens. You have a setback. You feel bad about it for 5 minutes or 48 hours, depending on how bad it was. And then you sit down, and you make a list, actual on paper or on your computer. You make a list of everything good that happened or what, or any lessons that you learned for it or how it has improved you as a person going forward. And once you make that list, once you put the first one down on paper that, you know, this was a positive result of this horrible experience, then you start that process. You come up with a second or a third or a fifth or a 12th idea that was something good that came out of that. So it really does start with a practice of formalizing it in a way that works for you, because what works for me isn't going to work for everybody else. But you have to do it in steps. And then after you've done it for a month or 3 months or 6 months or a year, then maybe you don't have to think about it. I say one of the things I really get offended by when I hear coaches doing is they tell people these wonderful techniques, yes, like law of attraction, like meditation, like gratitude, which is one of my favorites, but then they don't tell them that it takes practice and hard work.
Yes.
That it won't,
yes,
help you today or yesterday.
That consistency. Yeah. You have to exercise that consistency,
oh, yeah,
in being.
But how many experts have you seen or even talked to who don't take the time to let people know that it takes time, it takes practice, and it takes having a procedure or a formula?
So often hear that notion of forming the habit of doing something is just simply, this is the state you're moving into.
Right. I like to tell people one of the things that makes me great at finding the positive is I've spent a lot of time in my life on my ass looking up at where the sky should be.
You know, and then we look at that notion so often. Where do we learn a lot of these things? Where do we get a lot of the patterning in our belief and in how we look at how we're functioning? So often we're mirroring what society's telling us. So often we're mirroring what our upbringing has told us.
Yeah.
And shifting that, if that's your point of reference from a very young age, requires that constant mindfulness, requires engaging that on a consistent, habitual, thought-driven practice.
Yeah. And I'm willing to accept that my blindness has taught me patience, creative problem solving, optimism, and like you say, a conscious mindfulness approach to many things. I have friends who will tell you that I sometimes spend too much time with my own thoughts.
Yes.
And we laugh about it and then they go, but that's who you are. So
that's one I battle with. Can we seriously spend too much time with our thoughts, or is it what we do with that thought once we actually have it?
I think it's the thoughts you're spending time with that matter.
Yeah.
If you're spending time,
yeah,
with thoughts that remind you of things that went well or remind you of accomplishments or even remind you of how you managed to extricate yourself from a disaster. So if you're spending time with, you know, memories of friends and family, if you're spending time with those good movies in your mind, then
yeah,
I honestly don't think you could spend too much time with your thoughts unless it's keeping you from spending time with real people or people in person or online. But if you're spending all your time thinking about your failures, the baggage that's dragging you backwards, the people who hurt you, if you're thinking about all of that stuff, then yeah, you're spending too much time with your own thoughts. But that's, again, it's a process. You have to take the 5 minutes and say, what am I spending my time thinking about, worrying about?
Yeah,
how
it's
is
a relationship.
It affecting me emotionally or even physically? You know, some people, they're so wrapped up in their past mistakes or setbacks. I hate to use the word failure because I honestly have a hard time with that word. But
likewise.
They're so... Yeah.
there again, it's a relationship. What quality do you bring to that relationship?
Yeah, they are so invested in these past negative experiences that they can't find a way to move forward. So really, it does, come down to it. When you're spending that time with yourself, what parts of yourself are you spending time with? And there was a, I don't know if you remember this. You may not be old enough to remember this.
Okay.
In the late 80s, Fox did a television show. It was a wonderful television show called Herman's Head. Mm-hmm. And Herman was the main character, but he had these different actors who represented the voices of the different aspects of the human personality. I mean, it was hilarious.
I don't recall that one, but I'm going to have to go look that up because I love that aspect of looking at all of those different voices we so often pay attention to in our heads. Yeah. How many of those voices are our own authentic voice becomes my question. How often is that the voice of your own thinking, your own experience, or is that a projection of an outside voice?
Right, right. And I'll get to that in a minute. But one of the things I loved about his show is, is when they would have flashbacks, you would actually hear them play the noise of a old style projector with the film rolling, like he's actually watching a movie in his mind. It was just, it was really great. Something stuck with me. And, you know, until this conversation, I realized how deeply it stuck with me. So, but it's a great metaphor for this whole idea of, you know, what are you spending time with? So from there, where are we going to go next again?
Let me stick 1 second with that thought of the clicking of that projector noise, because it is so often just that, a projection from something other than what your own experience is speaking to you.
Right, right. And that reminded me of where I wanted to go next. You mentioned something. You mentioned something about success. Yeah, so much is happening here. I got an appointment at 2 o'clock. I'm starting to wonder if I'll get there or not. Yeah, but you know, you mentioned something about projecting, and I think projecting is a real big factor in success and failure, because one of the things I talked about in my first book, Leading You Out of the Darkness, Into the Light, A Blind Man's Inspirational Guide to Success, is that we don't often decide on our own goals or what success looks like. So when we do that, we're set up for failure to start with, although I hate using the F word. But you know, so I like to talk to people. Okay, is this your goal, or is this the goal you've seen on the internet?
Yeah.
You know, are you trying to be you, or are you trying to be the Kardashians? Whose goal is this, and where did it come from, and why is it important to you? That's the first thing. If you can get that nailed, as Nietzsche says, if you have a big enough why, you can manage any how. So,
yeah, self-agency. Are you taking responsible ownership for the role you're creating in your life? And it's your life that matters.
Right. And then you go from there to, what does success look like for you? Because are we talking about somebody else's view of success in a similar occupation or passion or pursuit? Or are we talking about your definition? Because way too often people get distracted by other people's goals and they think, well, say you're an author. Well, is your goal to finally publish your book, have it out in the world where people can read it, sell some copies, help improve some lives? Or is your goal to sell 100,000 copies? Is your goal to be on the New York Times? What is your goal and where does it come from? And if it isn't your goal, even if you meet it, you're not going to be happy with it. So that's another, you know, big stumbling block for a lot of people. And that's what I like to get people to focus in on, is what does success look like to you?
We look at that from the angle of that principle of that adaptation process, where exposure to similar situations gives rise to that habitual response. You know, we're acting out of the habit of what we perceive to be the expectation.
Right. How many people do you see on a daily basis where one of the first words or phrases out of their mouth or off of the screen is 6 figures or 7 figures?
And then 8, and then 9. And it's expanding at such a constant rate. You know, and that's not to demote that importance of how our society functions from that capitalistic exchange. But where do we draw that connection to say, this is meaningful to me because? So often people are just saying, that is the expectation, rather than, these are the goals I plan. These are the things that I would hope to do or achieve with that, that will create value and meaning for me in my life, in my interactions, my relationship, in my relationships to others.
Right, right. And I talk with a lot of people who, you know, they have disabilities, or they come from modest backgrounds to begin with. And what I find is, for a lot of people, it isn't the money, but it's, you know, sustainable money. I have been just continually surprised how much better some of my friends are when they know that they're going to get an extra $100 a month for at least the next, you know, 3, 6 months or a year. It doesn't seem like six figures,
yes,
but that extra amount of money, when you add it to somebody that is basically paying their expenses, living from check to check, it makes them feel better. It gives them a whole bunch of new possibilities. So we really do have to ask ourselves, yes, what amount of money or success will make us happy? Because, you know, some people, they get all tied up in, I'm going to have 1 million followers, or I'm going to have 10 million followers, or I'm going to have however many thousands of subscribers to my YouTube channel. You know, what does success look like? And are you chasing somebody else's definition of it? So that, as you say, the projection, the application of other people's goals, it's really dangerous. And it makes a lot of people frustrated and causes a lot of people to quit showing up at all,
yes,
because they're not meeting somebody else's expectations of what they should be able to do.
Let's bring that back in a little bit to that notion of interdependency. So often we're rooting these transactions, these interactions, and these collaborative opportunities we should have in that notion of competition, where we're looking again for that win-win scenario that so often can become a block because everybody's struggling to find this state of winning something out of the competition. How do we balance that to shift that and become more interdependent on each other, where we're more accepting of our interactions and more available for that help?
Well, I think the most important place to start is, again, back to your mindset, because so many people approach life with the belief that there's only so much out there. They have what people call a lack mentality.
Yes.
And as my good friend Ryan Badulph likes to say, that with 8 billion people in the world, almost 9 now, for podcasters to be concerned that there's 1,000 other people with a similar show would be like two plankton at the bottom of the Marianas Trench arguing over, say, hey, you stole my water, you know? So really, that's a big part of it. And you get to the point where somebody else's success doesn't equate your failure. And that's hard,
yeah,
but it is something you can, yeah, get to that point where, it takes conscious thought and effort. So if you can get to the point where somebody else's success doesn't mean your failure, that makes it a lot easier to collaborate in business. But on the other side, you do have to take some precautions when it comes to a business relationship. So my philosophy over the years has been, you get one opportunity for me to approach this as if we're friends. If that doesn't work, then I don't ever want to see you again. You know what I mean? I have collaborated back when I sold used rides, which I still do occasionally. I collaborated with one of the biggest organizations in the world. They have offices on 4 continents. And I was like, look, they had the buyer, I had the seller. And I'm like, okay, this could work. When it worked for them and didn't work for me, I stopped taking their calls and their emails. I'm like, I don't ever want to hear. So there are some times where, you know, you have to be sensible. You have to have a contract. You have to negotiate some things. But you can still come at it with a mindset of, I want the other person to come out of this just as well or better than I come out of
this. Yes.
And I think that's the key. You know, we're looking for win-win. We're looking for exchange. And I hate exchange.
Equal equanimity. That's a positive state I always look toward, is that notion of equanimity, thinking with an equal mind, acting
true
with an equal mind, and connecting with that equal mind. The mind being that the relationship we're forming here is equally beneficial.
Right, right. And for example, we are having this conversation and I do my best to come on here and have a conversation.
You're doing a fantastic job.
And we provide, thank you very much. And we provide value to your audience.
Yes.
And hopefully some of those people will visit your website, send you comments of appreciation, perhaps ask to hire you or do business with you. And then on my side, I get free content out of this because I get to write a blog post and do social media and say, hey, I was on the air with Jeff last week.
Yes.
You should go check it out. So we both got something out of this, but neither one of us thought, is he getting more than I'm getting?
Yeah,
you know,
that notion of community comes to mind. So often, are we looking at it from that perspective of an audience or that outside observer, or do we pull others into our community of being and share that experience?
Right. And that's one of the things I really try to get across in my podcast, Yes Students, is that this whole thing, you're not here strictly to promote you or your brand. What you're here to do, is you are here to have a conversation and to make a connection with some of the people in the audience. But the most important thing you are here to do is by the end of the conversation to have started a friendship or a relationship with the host.
Yes.
That's the most important thing you're here to do, because when you do that, then other amazing things can happen later. If I'm having a bad day, Jeff can go, Max, you know, you're just having a bad day. Tomorrow you're going to do something amazing, or vice versa. Or in 2016, I did a podcast with Joe Pardo called Dreamers Podcast. A year later, he was having a conference called the DreamCon, and ended up, I was honored and blessed to get to give my first public talk at his event, because, you know, it wasn't like I need to get so many people to come visit my website or it isn't worth talking to Joe. It was like we sat down, we talked, we became friends, and we've stayed friends ever since. Now, that doesn't happen every time I press record, but it happens enough of the time that I would do this even if there was no benefit to my brand or to my business for doing it, because I have fun doing it. And I think that's one of the things that's lost on a lot of people, is that it doesn't matter what the result of this is. This is fun. This is enjoyable, even for introverts.
Yes.
Even for people who are shy and introverted, this is fun for them. I've talked to a few of them. So you show up, and here's, you know, I love the emotional benefit I get from having these conversations, because to me, it's an experience, because I get up early, I take my shower, I put on my good clothes, I strap on my microphone, my headset, and I'm like, yes, we're going to go do this, you know? So
that's me. You know, every morning I have a conversation, a discussion for the podcast. I get up about 6 a.m. and I spend about 3 hours beforehand connecting with that energy, connecting with the individual, going back and reacquainting myself. You know, I did this morning, going through and listening, skimming through some of your podcasts, some of your posts, and absorbing your being. How am I present with you, Maxwell, when we have this conversation? Not just to say, okay, I'm going to pick out this highlight, I'm going to pick out that thing, but so I am in relationship with you, the individual, well before we hit record. We're connecting that energy source.
Right. And that is one of the things that is lost on so many people that are using podcast interviews as a way to grow an audience. Because, that's the side benefit.
That brings to mind to me that notion of contribution. What are we contributing or being in service of each other? You know, what are we doing to add to that cup for each other so we can experience that state of collaborative being, that state of joy?
Yeah. And the great thing is that quite often we don't know what that is until we get here.
Yes.
You know, we can do a little research. We can listen.
You know, it always changes. Every conversation I've had, it shifts and goes where it's naturally supposed to go.
Yeah. Before I realized we were recording, me and you were talking about how I've accepted my lack of control and can get in a driverless car. So, I mean, I do appreciate that. And I wish more people would approach this instead of thinking I'm doing an interview to promote my brand, to think I'm having a conversation to re-energize myself, to give myself some more joy, some positive energy that I can take throughout the rest of my day. And oh, by the way, there may be a few people listening that might be affected by it.
That brings to mind for me, as a brand professional, I've been a branding professional in a lot of regards throughout my life, as a business person, as a mentor to others, as a coach, this notion that I've stumbled upon called outcome transformation, which highlights that notion that as individuals, we're trying to find that way to collaborate and interact. And looking into that, there are four key non-individual states or components of that that I feel we should highlight. Cooperation, which maximizes joint outcomes. You know, that act of interacting together maximizes what we can do and achieve together. Those combined energies compound, we expand, we grow and move forward. Equality minimizes some of those differences in some regards and the outcomes we can create, because we're searching for that state where we're trying to equalize things. We're trying to both get that fair share. Sometimes that fair share can become the distraction saying, hey, I am getting more or less, rather than how are we contributing to serve the common good or the greater good for each other. Looking at altruism, which maximizes the positive outcomes of others. So often I feel we lose that equation where We are simply so rooted in our own self-belief, our own self-focus, we miss that opportunity to pour into someone else's cup and maximize the outcome for others, which also should in some way add to our own growth, our own progression. What so often happens is we engage in that fourth element of aggression, that notion of competition, struggle, or validation that minimizes the positive outcome, not only for others, but for ourselves. And if we aren't contributing to those notions of building others, we're also missing that opportunity, as you mentioned, for that joy for them and ourselves.
Okay, so when will I see this on TED Talk? Because that was some good stuff there, man. That was some good stuff. I mean, you got to go watch.
We'll slate that one. There's TED Talk number 428 for me.
Okay, I'm still trying to get my second TED booking and my first TED Talk. So we'll have to talk about that.
I'm stacking them up. So now it's a matter of me pulling on to that responsibility that so often's been called and put in front of me. I've just been given that opportunity that says, Maxwell is offering me this suggestion that says, get off your ass and do the TED Talk.
Okay.
So thank you for that inspiration. I need to make that the priority and act upon it.
Okay, so when this is over, are you going to send me the secret decoder ring so I can understand all this?
Yeah, we'll put it in the notes. We'll put it in the liner. Okay.
All right. So, I was booked to speak at the 10th anniversary TED Talk in Wilmington, Delaware. Mm-hmm. But 2 weeks before that in New York City, I got sick and had to go home. So yes. I had to cancel. And since then, I have not been able to book another TED Talk. Although later that winter, they invited me to come do the women's TED Talk in Wilmington. And I couldn't do that because I can only get from Houston to the East Coast, you know, a certain number of times. So, but yeah, I haven't done my first one yet. So this can also be a reciprocal of Max. You need to get off your ass and pitch some more TED events. And oh, by the way, a lot of them have been virtual. Why haven't you gotten one in the last year? So, so we can both challenge ourselves and our excuses if we want to get to that point of it, because we both have them.
I think we'll hold each other accountable as partners in this and move to that notion.
Yeah. And you mentioned being a branding expert, and I was sitting here thinking about smiling to myself because, you know, I know absolutely nothing about branding. I've been lucky that people have given me great names over the years, and I've been smart enough to just say thank you and run with them. You know, when I was doing the ride sales and I was Midway Marketplace, some roller coaster fans in Ohio started calling me Mr. Midway. And so I'm like, cool, that stuck. Online on social media, people started calling me the blind blogger. This was back when there were many more bloggers than me who happened to be blind, but they weren't putting themselves out there to the level that I was. Yes. And then, you know, people started saying, if Max can do it, then what's your excuse? And that's kind of stuck to the point where I now have a What's Your Excuse show, and we're launching a What's Your Excuse podcast network to help other blind people launch their own shows. So, I mean, I was smart enough to say thank you and do the work. The only thing I regret two things. One, if I had accepted being the blind blogger, because it is who I am, whether I want, you know, it wouldn't have stuck if it wasn't who I am. You know, they say dogs pick their owners, and I think to some extent brands pick their owners as well. So he's laughing at me, so he either agrees with me or he doesn't understand me.
Which dog are we tying our fight to? You know.
Yeah. So I wish I had accepted that I'm the blind blogger 2 years sooner, because then I would have been able to claim the .com.
Yes.
And I wish I had done this similarly with What's Your Excuse, because the What's Your Excuse website is currently for sale for $25,000. So I wish I had done that sooner too. But one of my favorite quotes is that actually comes from Tallulah Bankhead. When she was asked if she would do anything different in her life, she said, yes, I would make all the same mistakes, only sooner, make all the same mistakes sooner,
There again, that all speaks back to me, to that notion of interdependence that's there, that, you know, brings us right back to that notion. So often that help is unspoken. You know, it's all the time where, you know, that power of suggestion comes into play. It's not necessarily that conscious role on either of your parts. Subconsciously, we're all doing and being so many things in the background, how do we tune into that voice also can become so beneficial?
You know, wait a minute. That's a whole new concept I hadn't even thought of before, this idea of people offering to help. I hadn't even thought about the unspoken help.
Yes.
Dang, I'm going to have to reconsider that.
You're not channeling into the right aspect of that. You're trying too much to fall into the role so often.
Right.
So often, I'll say so often because I like to frame that, because then it starts to sound like I'm giving you a directive in it. But so often, we aren't tuning into that interactive part of it, that part where we both are aligning for benefit here. We're both looking for that mutual engagement that brings us joy, that brings us growth, that brings us opportunity, so and ultimately potential.
And one of the things I like to remind people of if they're thinking about doing podcast interviews is, whether you're the host or the guest, if you don't have at least one aha moment every time you press record, you need to stop doing it. Yeah, I can definitely see that. You know, one of the things that I am concerned about always is, am I truly providing value? And it's in one specific area. A host recently asked me, is there anything that I'm afraid of? And I told him, I'm afraid that someday people are going to stop enjoying my story.
Oh, well, if you're going to be fearful of something, that seems like a somewhat productive use of the fear then.
Yeah. And what it has caused me to do is caused me to think, well, Max, are there aspects of these stories you haven't told or that you haven't even told yourself? You know,
yes.
Sometimes we tell a story over and over again, books, public speaking, podcast interviews like this. We don't take the time to think, is there part of that story that maybe I'm glossing over?
Yes.
And recently I even had a book review. Somebody reviewed my third book, The Blind Bartender's New York City Adventures. They said, this is a really good book, but I think Mr. Ivy missed several opportunities to delve deeper into his emotions and to allow the readers to learn even more about him and to learn more about themselves.
Yes.
And I thought, man, that's one of those comments most people wouldn't have had the courage to put that on paper, you know, much less somewhere where other people could see it. But sometimes for us, especially people that are performers, even if you don't think about yourself as a performer, you may be out of practice and necessity. For those people who are performers, that are storytellers, sometimes you get to the point where you have to take some time and think, are there parts of this story I'm leaving out? Or are there parts of this story that I'm exaggerating? You know, I have made more difficult than they are.
Yeah.
I tend to gloss over things. I tend to devalue the difficulty of some of the things I have done. I have done several podcasts lately where when I mentioned having to code HTML, the host has stopped me and we have a short conversation about how difficult that is to do for somebody who can see it.
Gosh.
Much less somebody that's doing it with a screen reader listening to that stupid box tell me, you know. So I tend to devalue to diminish the difficulty of my accomplishments.
Yes.
But for example, I'm one of the few blind Eagle Scouts. There's very, very few of us. But I hardly ever talk about it. And when I do talk about it, I don't generally talk about how difficult some of the things were. I mean, like, you know, the first time they put me in a pool, being somebody who couldn't swim and learning to swim, that was one of those things. It's like, you know, if you can't learn this, there's a lot of other things you won't be able to learn. So I don't talk about some of those things enough, and I think I need to write about them and talk about them more. But for me, it's I'm not valuing the hard stuff. But I think for other people, a lot of times they make things worse in their minds and worse in the telling. And the more they tell them, the worse they get.
You know, to me, that speaks to that notion. How do we maximize our ability to connect in order to create that outcome transformation? How do we transform that act of collaborating to create a greater impact?
You know, it's interesting you put it that way, because I don't see that there will ever be a time that I can publish without having an editor, without having other people involved in the formatting and the submissions and that sort of stuff, the cover art. I have visually impaired friends who are authors who do it all by themselves, or they have a little bit of vision, or they have a little bit of sighted assistance. But I honestly believe that my books, even given some of the reviews, my books have been so much better than they could have been because of the collaboration, because of somebody else trying to put themselves in my place and see how I was thinking and feeling at the time, and then try to help me translate that into words that would tell the story better.
Yes.
And, you know, the really important thing is she knows me well enough that she can make my writing better without taking the part out of it that makes me mine. You know, without removing my voice, but at the same time, making the stories better. making the reading more enjoyable to the person looking at it on the screen or the page. So you're right. That is a very important part. And I wonder how many, you know, there are thousands of people self-publishing right now. I'm sure, you know, we both know that. Most of them, though, are doing it all by themselves.
Yes.
And I wonder how many more of those people would have a more enjoyable experience, would have more successful books, if they would at least reach out to somebody they know, you know, find some beta readers, find an editor who maybe thinks they could be an editor, but hasn't become a professional yet, or somebody with a background, like a professor or a teacher, and invite them to be part of the process. I wonder how much better that would be. And then one other thing about this collaboration that has to do with my vision loss, and it's something I encourage other writers to do, is Lorraine likes to say, and that's Lorraine Regulate at wordingwell.com, because
thank you, Lorraine.
My belief in gratitude, wholehearted belief in gratitude won't let me talk about my books without mentioning her. It's just ingrained in me at this point. So yeah, wordingwell.com. So she likes to say that she catches things that I miss because I can't see them. And I catch things that she would miss because I'm listening to them, because she doesn't hear them. And between the two, we end up with a much better product at the end of the editing, which is why I tell every writer, after you've edited it, looking at it, read it out loud.
That's a great
tip. Have somebody else read it out loud. Or if you're using a Mac or something that has the text-to-speech option, let the computer read it to you out loud. Because even that, you know, think about it. I hate to think about, you know, our computers and stuff as an entity that you collaborate with, but to a certain level,
gets us out of that voice in our own heads.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, that's such a great tip. Thank you for that.
Well, it's nothing new. It's just something I'm more conscious of because it's part of my everyday life, you know.
Yes.
But it is one of those things. It's a really simple thing to do. The only hard part, though, is a lot of people cannot read their stuff out loud and then still publish. So, you know, you have to evaluate what kind of person you are. And if you're the kind of person that cringes every time you read a line that you've written, then that's where you have to let somebody else listen to it. But really, your stuff should be, if you're going to publish, you know, if you're going to put it out somewhere where you're asking people to pay money, you really should ask somebody to listen to it.
That brings me back to that great point. You know, I like to leave our listeners always with something to ponder whenever possible. Who are you taking along for the ride to maximize your ability to connect and collaborate? That interdependence is such a key in that. You know, how are we being open, not necessarily to only be reliant on others, but to allow that magic of that collaboration to have the space to take place?
Yeah. And, you know, in this point, I like to remind people to look to their entertainment. How many members are there of the Avengers? How many members were there of Bilbo Baggins' party when he left in the first Adventure of the Hobbit? Mm-hmm. How many people were there in the main group of people in The Lord of the Rings? You know, if you think about the really great epic stories, in most cases, it was a lot of people. Look, you know, the movies of the 70s, The Magnificent Seven, which was based on a Japanese film with a similar title. You know, most of these things we do as a collaborative effort, whether we think about it or not. So
Strength in numbers.
Exactly. Collaborative abilities, because none of us have all the talent, skill, energy, time. They're all things that other people are better at. And it really just comes down to finding the freedom through practice of asking other people to come along on your journey. If it helps you, don't think of it as asking for their help. Don't think of it as asking for their opportunity. Think of it as asking them if they want to be part of your story, if they want to be part of your journey.
Added value.
That's the way I like to think about it. Because, you know, if you listen to, I know you've listened to some of our podcast interviews.
Yes.
You know, I'm what some people would call a name drop. it's not because I want to make myself feel better. It's because these people have sincerely done things for me, become friends of mine. I depend on these people. And to not mention them when it's appropriate, it would just be wrong.
Yes.
So allow people to come into your story, ask people to be part of your journey, be thankful when it happens, definitely show gratitude. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are going to come into your life and your story if you let them. They're going to offer to help. They're going to do things in ways they don't usually do them. And the most important part of this whole thing, as far as asking for help, accepting help, whether that ask be direct and literal or subconscious.
Yes.
Most important thing is to show gratitude. And when I say gratitude, I don't mean just saying thank you. Mm-hmm. To me, the most important part of gratitude is if I ask you, Jeff, if I ask you to create, if I ask you to tell me what my brand should be, because that's one of your expertise, and you tell me, Max, I think you should change this and this, but I think that's good. Here's what I think you ought to do. If I'm really, truly grateful, then a week or a month from now, I'm going to come back to Jeff and I go, look, here's what I did to implement what you suggested. I really appreciated it.
Yes.
How did I do? And if it all turned out like we expected it to, then I tell other people because Jeff isn't going to tell you. He might, but he probably isn't. Most creative, most successful people, they don't spend a lot of time telling the world what they just did. But I can tell the world what Jeff just did. So gratitude for these people that will come into your life if you let them, people that are willing to be part of your journey if you ask them, is gratitude. Say thank you. Act on their advice. And I once met a guy who was a real estate guy, and he gave me some great wisdom. He said, well, Max, if you're going to ask somebody to do something for you for free, you got to do one. He said, if you're going to ask somebody to do something for you, you've either got to be willing to write a big check or you've got to be willing to work your ass off. So, you know, when somebody helps you, show gratitude, use their advice, tell other people how awesome this person is and what they did for you and what it means to you. It isn't just he did this, but what did it mean to you for somebody that, you know, was a stranger, an acquaintance, somebody you saw on the screen. What did it mean for you that he did this for you? That's what you tell other people. That's how you show gratitude. And I honestly believe the gratitude part is something we really have to practice. It's really missing from the world.
Yes.
And I like to tell people, if especially, you know, for those people who believe in vision boards, and vision boards do work. There's proof they work. But I think that every vision board needs a gratitude frame. It needs a gratitude border. For every picture you put up on that thing of things you want to accomplish or have, you need to put a picture or write a saying about something you already accomplished or have. Because I honestly believe that if you don't remind yourself of where you came from and what you did to get here, you'll never get to that next place. So ask for help, accept help when offered, be gracious when people offer because it takes courage, and be grateful and show that gratitude in whatever way you can possibly think of.
It's so important. So important. I want to thank you today with gratitude and love for sharing such great insight with us, for sharing so much value, and for just being a genuinely kind, insightful, encouraging, and positive individual. Thank you for sharing that with us today. If I can be of service to you in any way, I'm here for you, my friend.
Well, thank you, my friend, for those wonderful words, those wonderful compliments. I appreciate them so much because, as you know, us creatives never get to a point where we're totally confident. We always have that gremlin sneaking around on the fringes, ready to pounce. You know, we're never sure. So I appreciate those kind words.
That can't often be the case. Yes.
Yes. But to take this back to our whole thing about collaboration, I wouldn't be the person I am today without the people that were in my life, without my grandmother, my father, my scoutmaster, a few teachers in high school, you know, and the one woman I always want to mention because I call her my blogging mama because she was the one who convinced me that I was more than just a used carnival ride broker. That's Adrienne Smith, who I often refer to as my blogging mama, who doesn't even have a website I can send y'all to, which is another reason why I love to mention her. But all these people that have come into my life over my lifetime, they've made me who I am. So if I am a kind, generous, loving person who does things from a point of view of there's plenty for everybody, and when I help you, I help me kind of approach to life, it's because of some really wonderful role models and teachers. And that, just one last thing. There's a phrase that says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Our teachers don't always look like teachers, and the lessons don't always take place in classrooms. So I've been blessed to have many great leaders, teachers, guides, even a few dragons along the way who did things to make me a better person.
I want to thank you again for sharing these wonderful insights. I want to thank Alex and Alicia Sanfilippino and Podmatch for connecting us, mentioning back to that interdependence and sharing that gratitude. I want to thank them for creating this wonderful platform that's put us in touch today. Where can our listening communities go to get in touch with you, Maxwell, and share more of this amazing energy of yours and these awesome insights?
Thank you. They can go to theblindblogger.net. That's theblindblogger.net. They can reach out to the contact form or send me an email at justask@theblindblogger.net. I give out my email because I don't want people thinking they have to be ready to book me, hire me, or buy something from me in order to talk to me, because every time we have a conversation, you know where it's going. Never know. But
yes,
we don't make people aware that we're open to have those conversations. They won't ever press send. So I want people, they can find...
If Such they, a great point.
Yes. And if they search for The Blind Blogger on Amazon or any of the electronic book websites, they'll find me and my books. I am Maxwell Ivey on most all of the social media platforms, and that's I-V-E-Y.
Yes.
And really, it all goes back to the website. And of course, I'm sure that Jeff here will put it in the show notes how you can find me. The most important thing is that you listen to what we've been talking about and realize that I sincerely want you to reach out to me. I may not be able to do anything for you other than listen. It may be one of those things, you send an email and at least you know one person has heard what you have to say without hearing all the other stuff that would go into, say, a friend or a family member hearing. And so I really do hope people will reach out to me, or they will reach out to Jeff, or they will leave something in the comments, because it really does come down to, if we don't meet, we can't become friends. And if we can't become friends, we can't do the amazing stuff in life.
Reach out to Maxwell, such an amazing storyteller, a genuinely encouraging and helpful human being. Thank you so much for forming this friendship and sharing this time with me today. This truly has been enjoyable. I look forward to doing it again soon.
I do as well, except the next time we do this, I want to do it in person.
That would be fantastic. Let's go for that.
Yeah, me and you will have some espresso somewhere and talk till the buzz wears off.
That sounds good, my friend. Let's do it soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Maxwell. As you reach the end of your journey, looking back, would you make different choices? Or would you simply be grateful for all the lessons which have shaped you, allowing you to become who and what you truly are? And when you reach the end, will you be thankful for the many relationships you have built, cherishing what you are able to contribute to others as we share this journey we all call life? Habajan Singha reminds us, when ego is lost, limit is lost. You become infinite, kind, beautiful. And in our quest to seek power, ego often kills anything of beauty and worth. And in the words of author Byron Katie, in her seminal book, The Work, looking back on the things which bring us happiness, we will reflect on what was truly beautiful. Remember, there's a tremendous empowerment and energy in sharing your life with others. Everything in life is about sharing. It is the very essence of the human condition. Are you willing to do the work, or are you merely accepting a false picture of yourself? Maxwell and I have shared our insights into why interdependence is such an essential element in building our relationships. If you found significantly meaningful value in our conversation, please drop us a note or send us comments of appreciation by visiting us at www.thelightinside.us or tag us on social media at The Light Inside Podcast, sharing what inspired you the most in this episode. We are grateful to be able to continue helping you, our valued listening community, discover your light inside. Remember to continue to support the growth of our program by sharing feedback or leaving us a review on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you find your favorite show, sharing with others why you enjoy our program here at The Light Inside. Joining us next episode is author Danny Bruce Levin, where we will discuss how understanding the art of listening is the alchemy of life. Check out Daniel's book, The Mosaic, available on Amazon Books or anywhere you buy digital media. And tune in next week to find out more about the art of listening on The Light Inside.